You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Today, we celebrate, observe, and remember the life and times of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And joining me today in studio to talk more about the legacy of Dr. King is Philip Thompson. He is board president and executive director of the Idaho Black History Museum. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you kindly.
I want to ask you, first question, why is observing MLK Day so important, not just in Idaho, but in our country?
I think above all, just the notion of inclusivity, or this idea of treating whatever you perceive the other to be as an equal, especially nowadays when you have this like a little bifurcation of us versus them, that message of, yes, we have differences, yes, we have things that we don't share in common, but the need to respect the other person as a human, that will remain to be a profound and important issue that we continue to practice. And I think currently it's been lost some, but that notion of respecting someone's humanness above all should always be taught.
You know, I think the one thing that there's so many things that stand out about Dr. King, but truly one of them was that I don't think there's any other way to say that he was like the chief spokesperson for nonviolent activism during the civil rights movement. And in this climate that we live in right now, what can we learn from King's philosophy?
I was much younger, so I was late to the nonviolent approach to everything, seeing that was always the best way to do things. But the older you get and the wiser you get and the more you learn that the moment you are dependent upon committing acts of violence, you lose your credibility, your truth, your pursuant of anything better than what we're doing now. If my only means to correct a given action is through violence, then really how much better is what you're doing than that violence is being perpetrated upon that group? And so nonviolent coordinated action is the only way that you can really facilitate change, discussion, and even a willingness to hear your side. Because the moment you strike out at somebody physically, violently, or otherwise, you've invalidated your own opinion. Even if you're right, for lack of a better word, it doesn't justify the action. And so we must be bigger, for lack of a better word, by committing ourselves to not responding with acts of violence. I mean, defend yourself, protect yourself, but not go out and correct a wrong by committing a wrong of your own.
You know, it's interesting when you say even sometimes when if you are right, yet you do some type of violent act in order to continue to be right. There's a saying that we have in our house that it's like, you're accurate. That doesn't mean you're right.
Exactly.
And that's a difference.
Yeah, completely. I don't think that we need to take a half step back. And it's the bigger person, I mean, to be one, to turn it down a notch and understand that, yes, I'm advocating for what is just, right, or otherwise, but understand that it doesn't necessarily imply that any action you take predicated on that means it's okay, that you're going to force yourself to abide by a higher measure, which is, like you said, I mean, you could be right. But it doesn't mean, okay, you'd be correct, but it doesn't mean necessarily right. You've got to hold yourself to a higher standard, especially if you're hoping to change the mind of those who are in disagreement with your entire approach.
And that's exactly what Dr. King did. And I mean, even now, I mean, there are, you know, video and pictures. And when you look at those and you even look at the march from, you know, in Selma, I don't know if we would see something like that in our climate today. I would hope that we would.
And just to be the a bit of an optimist, which is really not my disposition, but I have seen of late, people are, I think, are getting a little tired of this us versus them mentality. And there are those who are not seeking attention, but truly seeking to rectify the issue, that are saying, hey, we've got to dial this down half a notch, or we have to at least talk to this, whatever we perceive to be the other, because this can only end up in a bad place. Whether it be political differences, religious differences, racial differences, whatever, that you cannot have this us versus them mentality, and that all those who have any disagreement with you are therefore the enemy, because that's a cult. Nothing good's going to come of that. And I do think that we're seeing a bit of, other than those who are grandstanding, who have too much of a love for attention, that are dialing it back a notch and saying, hey, no, we may not agree, but we can agree that we are not that.
And that I would agree with that. I'm speaking with Philip Thompson. He is the board president and executive director of the Idaho Black History Museum. We're talking about the life and the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as we observe Dr. King's birthday today and his life on this MLK Day. You know, President Ronald Reagan signed the federal holiday into law back in 1983, but it was not until the year 2000 that it was officially observed in all 50 states, and Arizona was last. Idaho was a couple of states.
47.
That. Yeah, okay.
We'll
so
beat the punch.
Yeah, 47. Oh, why do you think that was? I mean, that is a long time to not officially observe a federal holiday.
And by no means do I want to let anybody off the hook. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there could be a litany of reasons as to why they didn't feel it was an imperative or necessary. Granted, I think it's a justification. But bigger than the actual holiday itself is, what were you doing in your state that was either supporting the idea or contrary to? And if you look at some of the steps that Idaho took prior to that were a little ahead of their time on a social level. It's like, okay, yes, they weren't quick to acknowledge the holiday, which was in fact a federal holiday. But if you think of Idaho history as a whole, we're not a fan of the feds asking us to do much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not saying it was purely that, but it might be bigger than, I'm assuming celebrating MLK holiday was a bone of contention for some, but it could be bigger than just them not wanting to do that. It could be the federal versus state issue, the Idaho will do it when we feel like it issue, that we don't have these problems here because it's a different racial history in Idaho because the black population was so small.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people who I know are not racist, for lack of a better word, but don't necessarily see that there's a need for some of these initiatives. And so it could be a true ignorance, not in a vengeful or a ill-spirited sense, but ignorance in the sense that if you grew up only in Idaho, it kind of becomes, okay, but who, what, when, why?
But could that also be why we need to recognize
absolutely.
And observe?
I totally agree with you. But I try, getting a little older now, I try to not vilify those that I disagree with or maybe I'm not completely aware of why they hold that feeling.
Mm-hmm. And what about the idea that here in Idaho, even when it wasn't being officially observed, there, as you said, there were a lot of events
exactly.
around it. There is a march every year to the State House, and this has been in effect for years.
And I believe it was in like 68 or the year he was shot. They had a gathering at the Capitol, like 700 people deep. We have a picture of it at the museum.
Oh, really?
Actually, my mom's in the picture. It's hilarious because she was in, I believe, high school then. And there was a gathering like 700 people on the steps when he was shot. And so I'm not trying to justify the apathy towards actually making it a holiday. But at the same time, we've got to look at the bigger picture and not just vilify, okay, why wasn't this done? Why wasn't this done? What else was being done? Maybe the elected officials were slow to decide to acknowledge or entertain or do so. But what was the city and the state doing as a whole?
Mm.
Was it an opposition or was it just apathy?
And what do you think would be some of the biggest takeaways from the life of Dr. King?
The biggest thing is, I think, would like bridge the gap to where we are now, is that people often forget that it started off with civil rights and, you know, humane treatment of blacks.
Mm-hmm.
But the last mission or thing he was trying to accomplish was bridging the economic gap,
right,
which got him vilified and ostracized by the powers that be because it's like, stay in your lane. Who are you to talk about this? Because that threatened the entire power system. And if you fast forward to today, the problems we're dealing with are often based upon economic disempowerment, poor blacks versus poor whites versus poor whomever the case may be, that larger issue, which would have addressed the concerns of the nation as a whole, as opposed to being seen as, oh, that's not my problem. That's what we seem to have missed by his passing, because that entire movement died when he died.
Because he was really starting that up, as you said. Was he not in... Wasn't he in Memphis for us? It was a sanitation worker.
Exactly.
And it was for equal pay. And not all sanitation workers were black in that city. Think about where we would be potentially today.
And the Poor People's Campaign for Affordable Housing, building not just the projects, but a housing plan that would allow people to take a part of this home ownership that leads to wealth for your family, which takes you out of poverty. I mean, it's a very multifaceted approach, but that was completely lost. And people don't even talk about it. The Poor People's Campaign could have changed the nation as a whole, which is why it was kind of killed.
Right.
Left alone.
You're right. We don't hear a lot about that. And my last question to you is, so what should our kids be learning about Dr. King? Because I think they know the basics.
I think
there seems to be more.
I think our kids should, yes, know what he did initially. But big picture was Dr. Martin Luther King, his job was to empower the disempowered. Regardless, it wasn't as simple as, oh, I'm only trying to help black people. It was, I'm trying to empower the disempowered, help the poor, bridge this gap between the haves and the have-nots, and allow us all to achieve. And what is it we need to do in order to make that come to fruition?
And isn't that interesting, though? Because I think a lot of times we think Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and what he did for the civil rights movement, for our, you know, black community. However, as you said, it goes so far beyond that. He was so forward-thinking.
Exactly. And I just think we really lose and we do a disservice by relegating him to, oh, he was trying to get equal rights for blacks. Yes, that was a beautiful thing, don't get me wrong. But number one, we have that now to some extent, so I could argue. But that there's a much larger widespread issue with the economic disempowerment of the second-class citizenship across the nation.
And that goes into many races.
Exactly.
I want to thank you for coming in today and talking to us about Dr. Martin Luther King. My guest today, the board president and executive director of the Idaho Black History Museum, Philip Thompson. Always good to have you in.
Thank you for having me.